Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And as you've been hearing, two big opinions from the Supreme Court this morning. Companies that object to contraception for religious reasons don't have to adhere to the Affordable Care Act in that respect. And public sector unions that want to collect dues from all public workers, whether they are in the union or not, may not be allowed to collect those dues anymore. But there are some nuances to both those opinions, as sweeping as they sound on first blush. And no one knows nuance better than Slate's Emily Bazelon, who has been speed reading these opinions in Nuance Central in New Haven. Emily, welcome back to – I think you're in New Haven. Welcome back to WNYC, and thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with Hobby Lobby and the headline. In a 5-4 ruling, you guessed it, Justice Kennedy joining the conservative four, the Supreme Court says employers with religious objections can refuse to pay for contraception coverage, as is currently required by the Affordable Care Act. So what's this ruling about? On what grounds? Is this about religious liberty? Is this about Obamacare? Is this about women's rights? Where do you want to start?
Oh, it's about all of those things. More specifically, it's about a law Congress passed in the early 1990s called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which said that persons have the right to free exercise of religion as long as they're not substantially burdening other people's rights. And so the first question in this case is, does persons include for-profit corporations? And the Supreme Court, in an opinion by Justice Alito for the conservatives on the court, said, yes, it did.
Yes, it did. Keep going.
Yes, it did. So once companies have the right to free exercise of religion, then you have the next question, which is, can the owners of Hobby Lobby say, well, we object to paying for health insurance that covers birth control because we think particular forms of birth control, namely the IUD and the morning after pill, really cause abortion. So we don't want to have anything to do with this. And the court said that is a protected right of Hobby Lobby's, that they don't have to pay for this birth control. And in the end, interestingly, the court kind of hangs the crucial part of its analysis on the fact that the Obama administration has allowed not-for-profit religious organizations not to pay for certain kinds of birth control. And so the court says, well, if the Obama administration says the not-for-profits are off the hook, there must be what's called a least restrictive means, another way to go about providing coverage, and the administration can just extend that to the for-profit corporations as well. In other words, as Justice Ginsburg says in dissent, taxpayers can pick up the tab for this birth control rather than the companies.
So what if I own a company and I have religious objections to blood transfusions or to vaccinations? Or if I'm a Christian Scientist and I object to almost anything that we might call medical care in the United States, can I opt out from Obamacare or any mandate to cover my employees with any kind of health insurance?
Justice Alito says no. He says we're not talking about specifically vaccinations and blood transfusions. He's very clear about that. But I don't know why he thinks that another company wouldn't succeed at that challenge, except that there seems to be this way in which he's treating sex and birth control differently from other kinds of disputed medical procedures. At the same time, though, and this is the part that doesn't make sense to me, Alito accepts the idea that the government has a compelling interest in providing health insurance that covers birth control for women, because there's a big report from the Institutes of Medicine about how much it benefits women's health to have birth control. So he has to go for that. And yet he says that blood transfusions and vaccinations are different.
So they are carving out explicitly a category for contraception and other reproductive health services that's different from any other kind of medical care as far as this religious right of a corporation is concerned. I'm just trying to get as clear on this as I can, because I think this is huge in terms of the implications of this ruling, just how much of a slippery slope they're opening the door to.
Well, exactly. And there's actually an interesting fight between Alito and Justice Ginsburg in dissent about just how huge this decision is, where Ginsburg is the one saying this is sweeping, this is going to cause all kinds of trouble. And as long as the government can pay for some kind of health care, religious employers are going to be able to opt out. And Alito is saying, no, we're just talking about birth control. We're just talking about the fact that the Obama administration had already made this accommodation for religious nonprofits. So I think this is going to be kind of confusing for the lower courts to know exactly how widely to apply this decision.
And listeners, if you have a reaction to, or even better for right now, a question for Emily Bazelon from Slate, from Nuance Central in New Haven, Connecticut, on these two big Supreme Court rulings coming down in the last hour, give us a call. Ask what you want to have clarified for you, or say what you want. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And the court said, as I'm understanding, you know, what I've, the little that I've been able to read, that the government has failed to show that the mandate for contraception coverage is the least restrictive means of advancing this interest that they acknowledge in guaranteeing cost-free access to birth control. So did they provide a roadmap, a way that the Obama administration can go back and do it differently that would be constitutional but would satisfy the same end?
Yeah, they suggest that the government can pay for this kind of health insurance itself. That essentially, since the government has already said to churches and some nonprofits, look, we understand you don't want to cover some forms of birth control, so you can opt out and we'll do it. Since that program is in existence, the majority of the court has said the Obama administration is obligated to extend that to for-profit companies.
So maybe that's not so bad, and they'll do that. And I don't know what the cost to the taxpayers of that would be, but it upholds at least the compromise that they made with the religious institutions, which the Catholic Church, for example, still does not accept as legitimate. They say they're still being forced by the Obama administration anyway to provide contraception coverage that they don't believe in, even if technically the government picks up the tab. But on the face of it, if that compromise is accepted as legitimate, then there's a fairly easy solution to still get all the women covered.
Yeah, it does seem that the majority is suggesting that. And there's even a line where Justice Alito says if the government pays for this, there will be zero cost to the female employees of Hobby Lobby. And that sounds good. But you're right, exactly right, to bring up this other separate challenge that some religious groups have mounted to the very accommodation that the court is celebrating today. And the court actually doesn't want to go so far as to say we are sure that that accommodation is itself constitutional, because there are these other cases going on about the scope of that accommodation and whether it applies to more nonprofits than the Obama administration wanted. So there's still going to be a fight about that too.
And this case is being cast as being about the religious rights of a corporation. I'm curious, did the court say anything about the religious rights of the individuals who work for that corporation to be covered for contraception if that's the law of the land and their religion allows for it? Did that factor into anybody's writing today?
Well, Justice Ginsburg tries really hard to talk about the interests of these women employees and how important birth control can be to their health. She doesn't really frame it as about being about their religious rights. But the basic concept you're talking about, I think, is really crucial to the way she sees this case and the way I see this case, which is that you have two competing sets of rights. If you believe that private companies have religious rights, which I still stumble on that. But even if you accept that idea, you have these female employees. Their rights are being substantially burdened here. Ginsburg cares about that. Alito, just in the end, it's not. It doesn't persuade him.
David on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I was kind of on the same vein. If the corporation is a person, well, the employee is a person. So is it a one-way street? For example, could the employee have a religious belief they wish to impose on this person we know as the corporation, or is it just a one-way street?
Right. Whose religious liberty under the First Amendment is paramount? But I guess since the requirement is on the company, that's why the justices would say it's the company's religious rights, First Amendment rights, that are in question here, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And also, a woman's right to birth control isn't usually framed in terms of, like, I have a Christian or a Jewish right to birth control. It's a health interest. So it's not quite parallel, even though it should still be important.
Charlie in Newark also wants to ask about corporate personhood in this ruling. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is this. Corporations have limitations on their liability that people do not. And I wanted to know if this argument is being made in these corporate personhood cases, and if they are not, if there was some precedent for why they're not. Specifically that, as you might know, if a person goes, if a sole proprietorship goes bankrupt, the owner of the company goes bankrupt. But if a corporation goes bankrupt, the owners of the company do not go bankrupt. So
right.
I find it odd that you're getting this corporate rights issue without a without adequate liability to go along with that presumed personhood. And I'll take my answer offline.
Thank you. Or as the sign said at an Occupy demonstration that I saw covered on television, I'll believe corporations are people when Texas executes one.
Right. Well, right, exactly. And what sounds like they get at is this question of what is the scope of corporate personhood. Okay, we treat corporations as people from the point of view of you can sue them and they can go bankrupt. But does that mean that they have religious beliefs? That's like a different step, right?
Right. And I guess this is the part of the analysis where I get to say Scalia and peyote in the same sentence, because there's actually some some deep history here, a case where Justice Scalia ruled against some plaintiffs who said that their religious rights to smoke peyote were violated when they were fired. And in that case, Scalia said the social harm of the drug use trumped the religious protections. So how does this opinion today square with that prior ruling?
Yeah, so that's a really important ruling from 1990. And the basic idea was that you can't say, I get to smoke peyote as a way to get out of following a law that applies to everybody generally. And that was seen as a defeat for religious minorities. And so Congress appeared a couple of years later. It was bipartisan. Ted Kennedy and Orrin Hatch got together and they drafted and passed this law that we are dealing with today, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which went back to an earlier understanding of the idea that if you have a religious right, you could maybe get out of a law that applies to everyone if it substantially burdens your own rights, and if the government has no compelling interest or fails this least restrictive means test of achieving that interest. So that's the law the court was interpreted today. And the question is whether the court got it right and this is what Congress intended, or the court has kind of gone off the rails and gone much further. And because we're talking about a statute and not the Constitution, Congress could go in and change today's decision. They could say, court, you got it wrong. We didn't mean to extend it to for-profit corporations.
Mm. So what if the owner of Hobby Lobby turns out to be a religious peyote user? Can he go back to court and say, okay, I object to contraception coverage and I use peyote. What are you going to do about it? What would Justice Scalia say?
Right. Well, this is the problem with this case, I think, that we were getting at earlier, which is the court will find some way to say no. And yet, why? What is the real difference here? Why is the religious employer who doesn't want to pay for blood transfusions or want to use drugs different from the religious employer who doesn't want to pay for birth control, given that the court has accepted that birth control is, in fact, a health benefit for women, and that's why the government had an interest in providing care?
And we should
say, there's this.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that the answer to that the court is giving today is, oh, well, the Obama administration can go pay for it itself.
Yes.
But that's not a very satisfying answer, that the government just has to pay for every single thing that anyone mounts a religious objection to.
And we should make clear that the court also stated that there is no Religious Freedom Act basis for getting out of paying income taxes or Social Security taxes if your religion thinks that that's, godless Marxism or something like that, right?
Right. They drew a line. But why? The line is not really – they just said that it was there, so it's so. But that doesn't mean that it's a satisfying rationale.
The other big case coming down today, Harris versus Quinn, about the constitutionality of agency fees, so-called, charged by public sector unions to all workers in a unionized setting. even non-union members. I know people in this position, people who are public sector workers who, for whatever reason, don't want to join their union, but they still have to pay the dues because the union still negotiates a collective bargaining agreement that they benefit from in terms of wages and benefits. Now, the court ruled against the union, saying that the fees were not constitutional. What does this mean?
Well, this is an opinion that did what you just said, but could have been a much bigger disaster for public sector unions and is actually pretty narrow. So in this particular case, these employees are basically home health workers. They're called personal assistants. So they work for people individually, but Illinois passed a law saying they could organize in order to collectively bargain. It's like that problem. Everyone has their own home health nurse. So unless they can join a union, how could they ever get better wages and benefits? What the court said was that even though Illinois passed that law allowing these people to unionize, they are not actually public sector employees. Or I think what Alito, who wrote this one too, he says something like they're partial public sector employees. So he separates them out from all of the teachers, firefighters, police, and says that in their case, the unions cannot collect dues from people who don't want to pay because those people have a First Amendment right not to support a cause they don't believe in. And the problem is, first of all, this is not good for these particular sector of workers, home health aides, but also more largely, is this a step along the way toward eventually disallowing this kind of union fee for all sort of public sector employees? And Alito doesn't go there today, but he kind of suggests that he would like to.
And the court did try to parse out this particular class of employee that was being discussed in the case, making a distinction between partial and full public employee unions. Some people are already noting that the phrase partial public employee doesn't exactly have a big history. So there is, as of 5 minutes ago, one hit on Google for that phrase, just one. So did the court just sort of invent a new class of public employee in order to limit the power of unions?
I mean, I think they basically did, because this doesn't really make a lot of sense. I mean, it is true that if you are taking care of someone in their house, you have a relationship with that person. But if the state comes along and says, okay, we can see that for purposes of collective bargaining, you need to also be thought of as state employees because you're providing a service that's connected to Medicaid, which is a state program, you would think the court would have accepted the state's way of thinking about that. But this is a pretty anti-union majority, and so they rejected it.
So are there implications here for private sector unions? Why is this just a public sector case? What if I'm the, you know, the Teamsters or any other union and people don't want to join the union, but we're still collecting dues from them because we're still negotiating on their behalf and they're benefiting from our negotiations? Does that exist in the private sector?
Sure. And if you're the Teamsters, you read this opinion, you take a big breath, a sigh of relief that the court didn't go the whole way and rip out obligatory dues for all public sectors. But you say, I'm reading this and I see the logic here that these five conservatives buy into, and I'm worried about the next case, because when some private sector employees sue, it is going to be easier for the court to go back and reverse a 1977 decision that allowed for this kind of dues collection. And the logic here is important. So in 1977, the court accepted the idea that if unions can collect fees from everyone they represent, that prevents a problem of free riding, right? Because that way they're collective bargaining for everyone. Everyone gets the benefits. Everyone has to pay. And Justice Alito is saying, I don't accept that logic anymore, and neither do the other conservatives. So that does not bode well for future cases.
So why was the case just about the public sector? Why wasn't the question whether any union in America could do this or not?
That's a really good question. I mean, the easy answer is just, well, the people who sued here were these quasi-public sector workers who didn't want to pay union dues. But I would say that it's also about the tactics of the right-to-work movement, the kind of conservative anti-labor union movement. They picked this case very carefully. They've gotten really good at this kind of litigation. And so if you think of this as they have a big hill to climb to reverse that 1977 decision and upend the whole way that unions are funded, this is like one step along the way. And they actually probably planned this out and are teeing up their future cases.
So just to circle back around to Hobby Lobby to wrap it up, what should an employee do today in a company where they think the owners might be religious? Should they go have a talk with their HR departments, like in the next hour?
Well, they could try, but they are going to lose if their company doesn't want to pay for particular kinds of birth control. And what they really should probably do is start lobbying the Obama administration to extend government-paid-for birth control to private companies in the way that the court basically invited the government to do today. And then you have a bigger question about whether taxpayers should really have to pick up the bill for this part of Obamacare.
From Nuance Central in New Haven, Connecticut, parsing the Supreme Court rulings of this morning, Slate Court Watcher Emily Bazelon. Emily, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, new documentary about the legendary Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff called The Pleasures of Being Out of Step. We'll hear some excerpts, we'll talk to the director, and there may be a special guest along the way. Stay with us.